Survivor fans, we are not just surviving, we are thriving with the power of nutrition. Let's talk about Wonderful Pistachios, a snack that's not only delicious, but also a protein powerhouse.
When I was on that island, I would give anything for a snack to keep my energy levels up.
Well, did you know Wonderful Pistachios are one of the highest protein nuts out there? Each 1 ounce serving gives you 6 grams of protein, delivering over 10% of your daily value.
Whether you're a hardcore survivor or just need a boost during your day, Wonderful Pistachios are the perfect personal protein stash, ready to go whenever hunger strikes. So whether you're cracking open each nut one by one or enjoying the convenience of no shells, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered.
Outwit, outplay, outsnack with Wonderful Pistachios.
Visit wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
You know, Jay, a stressful part of playing Survivor was not being able to get things off my chest, since when it came down to it, we were all after the same price.
Yeah. And since you played such an amazing social game, it must have been hard to keep things bottled up.
Absolutely. It was rough having to keep everything inside, big and small things, to stay focused on the game.
And having to do that can have a really negative effect on us, which is one of the reasons that I love therapy.
Exactly. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
It's all online and made to be convenient and flexible so it can fit your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist.
And you can switch therapists at any time for free, so you're sure you're on a team with the right person.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/onfire today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/onfire.
Welcome to On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. I'm Jeff Probst, the host and showrunner of Survivor. Each week, I'm joined by Jay Wolf, Survivor fan and the producer of this podcast. What's going on, Jay?
Hey, Jeff.
As well as former Survivor player and the winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares. Hey, Dee.
Hey, hey.
So each week we dissect the big moments of the most recent episode of Survivor and bring you the insight from three points of view: the fan, the player, and the producer. Let's get into it, Jay. Episode 4, Survivor 46.
Yeah, I think from the top, this is an episode that will go down as a Banu episode.
For sure.
And we will get into Banu's story, but I want to start somewhere else. I want to start with a little song called I'm in the Mood to Win Some Food.
Get on your feet if you want to eat. Yeah. I'm in the mood to win some food. And that's what Nami is going to do. Because it's morning time and feed you.
As a tribe, Randon leaving affects morale. It's our first real loss.
Where that bass at, Liz?
But we definitely have to forge ahead. I don't care how much it takes, because I feel like I'm Queen Morale. I try to make people laugh and bring people together and do silly things that get us forward. Because the thing is, we have to win because we have to eat.
I'm standing up right now. I'm giving a standing ovation. Jay, I know I have drank a full gallon of my own Survivor Kool-Aid. I get it. But even hearing that again, and I've heard that clip so many times now, I still got the same kind of soulful goosebumps. And it's, you know, another reason why Survivor is so unique, that you can have these strangers form a community and then it can lead to this. Okay, what's your question?
Well, it's exactly that. It's how do you go from two strangers who are now friends sitting on a beach singing a song to each other to what we just heard, which is a full orchestration performance that everybody is extremely impressed by.
Okay, so first of all, there's some legal issues, actually. Anytime you use music, like any music cue that you hear on Survivor is written by somebody. It's either David Vanacore, who does most of our music, or it's James Burnett's company, who also does a lot of music for us. They get paid every time that music plays. In this case, this was an original song. Soda and Tevin made up this song. So believe it or not, the first thing you have to do is you have to make sure Tevin and Soda are registered in the proper music association. And it turns out they were. So clearly this is not their first time dealing with music. And if they hadn't been, we would have registered them. It's easy to do. And then the next thing you have to do is register the music that David Vanacore wrote to accompany them, because that's an original piece. So together, the three of them have now essentially created a song, and they will share in the royalty payments. So that's really fun, because that doesn't happen very often on our show, but we now have an original Survivor song. And imagine this. What if in a future season, we use this song while another tribe is like, because if you remember that scene, there's also a shot of Venus and she's sort of sweeping the dirt with her bamboo made, you know, broom. Right. I felt like I was watching live jungle theater, and it was so fun. And you can't explain it. Dee knows. Dee's been in that environment, but you can't really explain the experience. But now that they've built it, maybe we should use it again at some point.
Totally. I love it. All right, Dee, I want to talk about what motivates two people to break out in song like this, which is hunger. It's now day 7. It's been literally a full week since you've had any real food. What does that really feel like?
Listen, Jay, hunger is the worst part of all. Mm. It was my weakness. They're really just singing the song to get their mentality away from how hungry they are. Remember, we're only eating one coconut split between your entire tribe, literally 2 inches, and your stomach really does start hurting. You're getting sharp pains. You're walking around camp. Your pants start falling down. And then you start thinking to yourself, oh my God, I'm losing so much weight. I can't lose any more. If I lose more, I'm not going to be as strong for the challenges. So all of these thoughts are constantly just rushing through your mind. Another thing I want to say too, on day 7, you start getting cranky. Your tribe mates start pissing you off. And you start getting in your head like, is it just me? Or am I actually getting really pissed off? Or is it them? So it's a whole constant battle in your head. And these are the moments where you really need to be careful, because these thoughts can really ruin your perception of another player and can ruin your chances of working with someone just because you're hungry. Mm.
You know, that's a really interesting note, because I think we talk a lot about all the other things that food deprivation does, cognitive decline, emotional exhaustion, all that stuff. But just that specific point of just being in a bad mood because I'm hungry might make me react in a way that could kill my game. Just another reason Survivor's so difficult to play, because it taxes you everywhere.
Mm. All right, I want to move on to the next moment. I want to talk about Jem's move when she decides she's going to plant the note from the Beware Advantage that she found in the previous episode. So as she tells us, people are starting to get antsy, and she decides she's going to plant this note on a tree, which then inspires the tribe to literally dig up the entire tree.
Finding a Beware Advantage, replanting it, have somebody else dig up a tree. Like, that's the fun part.
We all ready?
We'll be back.
And my hope is that I'm able to pin it on someone else.
Yeah, let's go.
So I'm having fun on Survivor. So that's exciting.
Great work, Maria. Yeah.
So before we get to how she plants it, Dee, how much do people talk about the Beware Advantage when you're just sitting around the campfire?
It's really an unspoken agreement between your entire tribe. If you're bringing it up, it's either one, the person who knows exactly where it's at, or two, the person that's bringing it up has no idea what's going on at camp. So when it is brought up, it's really just to kind of get a vibe of your tribe mates and see who knows what based on body language.
Mm. Wait. So you're saying you're using it as a tool? Like, how do you explain to me how you would do that?
So Jem is the perfect example, right? She plants the note. She sees everyone dig. She creates suspicion. Then she sees Tim, who is looking shady naturally while he's looking for the advantage. And then when she's sitting in the log with her other tribe mates, she brings up, hey, you know what? Tim might be the one who has it, because he's overcompensating for having the advantage. And I think that's genius. Jem is freaking playing, and I love it. She's having so much fun, and she actually took multiple risks in one setting.
Well, I want to take Jem's risk and move on to that suspicion in general. Mariah gives us a piece of information, Jeff, that I just want to gut check with you.
Okay.
Jeff, where is this thing, dude?
Jeff, don't lie.
A few fundamentals in Survivor. One, Jeff will never lie to you. Two, Jeff will never give you anything impossible.
If Jeff put this in the tree, he's good, because this is absurd.
I love that clip.
Jeff, Mariah's being very matter of fact here. She's saying, Jeff will never lie. Jeff will never give you anything impossible to do. Are these the rules?
Well, they are really the rules. And I think it showed great insight from Mariah, because in a game in which there's very little you can count on, I think over 45 seasons, I don't lie. And we don't give you things that are impossible to do. We give you tests and obstacles to overcome. You may fail, but we're not designing it that way. So I'll tell you the history on this. It goes back to season one. Mark would have these ideas that he wanted to try. And sometimes in his pitch to me on how we should execute it, it just felt too manipulative. Well, that's Mark. You know, he's a salesperson. I'm different, and I had to be the host. So as we crafted how we're ultimately going to execute it, we would always lean into one thing. The players have to trust me in order to trust the game.
Yeah.
You need them to believe and know that the game is fair, and it is. And we do have a standards and practices person always on set, and that's their job to enforce the rules. But it runs much deeper than that. It's a relationship. It's a feeling. And so it had to come from me. That doesn't mean you can't still have fun with your word choice or your pace of delivery, where you might pause and let a player fill in what they think is coming next. That's all part of the fun. Well, one of the best examples is Survivor Thailand. We did what's kind of known as a fake merge. And I'll just walk you through it, because I gotta admit, was pretty proud of how we pulled this off. So to take you back, that's season five, a long time ago.
Yeah.
There were two tribes, each with five players. Both tribes get a note. Choose a color from this basket and paint yourself up. And then they all come together with me and they're all painted up. And I tell them, okay, now pair up with the person from the other tribe who has the same color and go off somewhere in the jungle here and get to know each other. Well, this is typically the point where the merge happens. So assumptions are now going to be in play. This is a merge. One player, Shean, thinking we're merging, shares way too much information with her partner from the other tribe. She basically says, I'm on the outs. So after they've had their get to know you conversations, we all regather and I say a few more key phrases. You will all now live together on a new beach. You are essentially starting over. But I still use their tribe names. They don't get a new buff and I never say merge. So all the players all leave and they go to this one beach where they're going to be living together and they discover a big feast. Again, very intentional. We've only ever given them food at the merge. So now all the players are assuming it's a merge. And Shean, who already gave away a lot of tribe secrets, is now in the center because she's being pursued by the other tribe because they know she feels on the outs. Shean's tribe is concerned because they're worried she's going to flip on them at the next tribal. Shean confirms to her tribe, I am. I'm going to flip and I'm going to join the other tribe. So now instead of 5-5, it's 6-4 in Shean's head. But then they show up to the challenge and somebody says, well, Jeff, now that we're merged. And I say, I never said merged.
No.
And that's when Shean knows she's dead. We have a challenge. Shean's tribe loses. Shean is voted out. And that line, I never said merge, is what all of the other elements were designed to get to. Everything had to play. And then you sit there and you wait for a player to say something about the merge. And then you go, what? I never said merged. And the game has changed.
Dude, that's super harsh because that's coming from someone who's never played Survivor. You don't feel bad about that at least a little bit?
No, not at all. No, D, and I'll tell you why. Because for all the clues that led them to believe there was a merge, there were just as many clues to indicate they had not merged. No new buff. I called them by their old tribe names. So that's on them. I felt very good about how we handled that. And I'll just give you a couple of other examples. In those early seasons, we started doing twists that would happen after a challenge. And I was worried that the perception might be, oh, they just decided to do that based on who won or who lost. So I would always say, Mark, I'd like to tell them and there will be a twist at the end of the challenge. I drove him so crazy. I went further than that. I said, and I'd like to have the note in my pocket sealed in wax so that I can pull it out and essentially say, here it is. It's already decided what's going to happen. The only thing that hasn't been decided is who it's going to happen to. so that they know it's right in my right front pocket. There's no trickery going on, right? Because I really wanted them to trust us. And I think that was the problem with change history, is that the players feel like, well, we should have been told in advance that something big was happening, maybe even tell them the whole twist so that they could have made the decision about who do they send with that power. But had we done that, then the twist wouldn't have worked, which is why it was a terrible idea. Okay, so Mariah's right. We don't lie, and we never make it impossible. Let's take a break. When we come back, let's talk about a water challenge. Not impossible, but very difficult to do, not only for the players, but for us. We'll be right back.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
You know, Jay, a stressful part of playing Survivor was not being able to get things off my chest, since when it came down to it, we were all after the same price.
Yeah. And since you played such an amazing social game, it must have been hard to keep things bottled up.
Absolutely. It was rough having to keep everything inside, big and small things, to stay focused on the game.
And having to do that can have a really negative effect on us, which is one of the reasons that I love therapy.
Exactly. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
It's all online and made to be convenient and flexible, so it can fit your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist.
And you can switch therapists at any time for free, so you're sure you're on a team with the right person.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/onfire today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/onfire.
Welcome back to On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. All right, Jay, what's the next moment?
Yeah, I want to jump into what happened after the reward challenge. Each team had a different result. You had two winners in Nami and Yanu, and you had a loss from Siga, something new we haven't seen before. What I thought was particularly interesting was seeing three very distinct experiences and bonding moments for each of those tribes.
Well, yeah, I think it's really interesting note, because we talk a lot about the experience of Survivor in the new era, but it takes playing the game to get the experience. And this reward challenge is a great example of one game providing three totally different experiences. Let's just take the ones you mentioned. So you have Tevin, because just coincidentally, the reward was fish. It set up a connection to his dad. And so that's what that story became about at Nami, because that was the most interesting, a personal moment for one player, and the story was told very simply. Yeah. Over at Yanu, you have a different story. We won! Amazing! Celebration! Oh, wait. We won. That means we could win again.
Yeah.
What if we start winning and we go to the merge with Banu? Oh my God, he'd be a liability. We got to teach Banu how to play this game, and quickly. So now you have a very different, urgent story happening over there. Mm-hmm. And then at Siga, it's their first loss. So they're having their own experience, and the group rallies behind Maria, who felt it was her fault. They're trying to tell her it's not your fault, but Maria's own personal story of guilt or shame is overwhelming. So that becomes the story at their beach. Three very compelling stories or experiences from the same game moment.
Yeah. I want to stay on Maria here. Dee, she's obviously very emotional. And in this scenario, the tribe seems really supportive. Over at Yanu, I think people are a little less supportive of Banu and having to get him up to speed. You were a master on your season at managing your emotions. What's your take on how to do that?
Well, thanks, but I wouldn't really say I'm a master. But I think, to me, in hindsight, my honest take is that you got to practice your emotions before going on Survivor, because you'll look back at the way that you're playing and you'll realize that a lot of your life experiences show up on that island, the way that you react. And you kind of have to know how and when to show your emotions and around who. So in Maria's case, I thought it was beautiful, because she was really down about, you know, losing the challenge and everyone was being supportive. But there are moments where you really kind of also have to know when to be reactive versus responsive, and kind of just sit in your feelings and not react as quickly, because that can kind of taint your game. And something that also really helped me was, anytime something didn't go the way I wanted it to go, I'd always just think to myself, all right, what's the good in this? What's the good in this? Because there's always a solution on Survivor, always, even if it's not the solution we may necessarily want at first. But even when there was a random rock draw that didn't go my way, looking back, I'm like, wow, I'm glad it didn't go my way, because then XYZ wouldn't have happened afterwards.
adaptation.
Yeah.
Right there in the moment, you have to find the good. You have to find the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a survivor lesson. And I think also a life lesson, if you can get good at that. All right, let's go to the next moment. A couple really impressive things happened at the challenge that may have gone unnoticed. And I want to get underneath it, so to speak, excuse the pun. Underwater cameras, perfectly placed, a slow motion jump shot 50 feet in the air, presumably taken from a boat somewhere. There are boats racing in on a drone shot. I mean, honestly, Jeff, it's like watching a movie. I feel like we're in the middle of Mission Impossible, but we're watching Survivor. We talked about camera and underwater challenges in season one, and I encourage you to go back and listen to that if you haven't listened to those episodes of this podcast. But Jeff, can you refresh us how water changes a challenge?
Yeah, shooting on land versus shooting in the water brings some logistical challenges simply because you're in the water. So a big overview is just imagine that you've built this challenge in the middle of the ocean. That's its own impressive feat that involves our challenge and marine teams. And then what we do is our grip team set up essentially these steel platforms. And along with marine, they secure these on the floor. So you've got these big, almost like floors just above the ocean water. And that's where all of our camera operators will stand with their cameras. And they can get wide shots, they can get long lens close-ups. Then we also, as you noted, we have cameras that are in these little inflatable boats. You've got a captain driving them, very quiet engine. They're moving very slowly, almost like they're on a dolly if you were shooting a movie scene. Then we have camera operators with scuba gear on. They're underwater getting the shot of someone diving into the water or releasing a buoy.
Wow.
And then we have our drones. So they're up in the air and we've gotten a lot more aggressive. We have a drone team now and they get so many cool shots that you can't get any other way. And then we have Scott Duncan, we have Russ Phil. They're doing their specialty shots, which are different for every challenge. That's all happening. The key to it all coming together is David Dryden. Hmm. He's our director of the challenges and tribal council. So the responsibility falls on him to ensure we have all the shots we need when we get in the editing bays, because just to say it again, you get one chance.
Right.
Yeah. We're not going to go back and say, D, we missed the shot of you jumping, so we're just going to hang on. You're going to climb. That doesn't happen.
I'd be so pissed. I'd be so mad.
But so, D, you know what it's like out there. It's chaos. It is war. You would imagine that Dryden would have all these monitors and he's looking and confirming. No, no monitors. He's standing there with a little radio where he might adjust a shot for somebody. But basically what happens is he has to have a plan and they rehearse the plan. Then they look at the footage and now everybody knows their assignment. And then once you get out there, it's a live event and unexpected things happen. So Dave might call an audible, but an operator might also just listen to their instincts. We thought the story was going there. The story's going over there. And it's a theme we talk about a lot, but it's thousands of hours of doing it and the ability to stay calm under pressure. And if you're a young person listening to this, whatever career you're in, if you put the time in, the mastery will come.
Yeah. Mm. It's like, Banu, you missed the buoy and all of a sudden the camera shot has to completely change. Something to think about.
Exactly.
All right, Dee, same question.
Yeah.
How does water change a challenge for you?
Oh my goodness. So I don't know if you guys know this, but we actually saw a sea snake day number one on our way to the marooning. And that's when I was like, oh my God. This, I'm in for a treat. But look, I'll take you inside my brain in a water challenge. Imagine looking at a challenge in the water for the first time. You automatically start to feel panic. You're wondering, how in the world am I going to jump from this high platform into the water, make sure my jump is perfectly calculated, smash a target, and on top of that, I don't want to belly flop because I want to look like a badass on national television. But then you finally land in the water and it's not over because now you just lost your buff from the impact of the water. And now you got to swim a different direction to grab your buff. And by the way, that sea snake has not left my mind. It might just still be around me. So I'm swallowing a necessary amount of water because of how many times I'm panting, trying to finally catch my breath. And I'm also looking at my competition to my right, to my left, making sure that I'm not in last place. And then I hear my tribe mate screaming at me to hurry up. And that's when I finally tune out my thoughts. And that's how water changes this challenge. You kind of just go crazy.
Wow.
Okay. One more quick break. Then, Jay, we got to get into the heart of the episode, or in the case of Banu, the million hearts. We'll be right back. Welcome back to On Fire. Okay, our final moments of the episode, Banu's journey, his story. Jay, why don't I just set it up?
Yeah.
Okay, so look, we can say a lot about what happened to Banu and the way he played his game, but I felt it was all beautifully encapsulated in the last two acts of this episode. So first, let me set up the team who produced this sequence. We have Dawn Haber. She's one of our co-EPs. She oversees the entire episode, alongside Brian Barefoot, who's a supervising producer slash editor and Dawn's creative partner on this entire episode. Little side note about Brian. He's one of only five of us who have been there since day one.
Wow.
Brian was actually in Borneo editing because Mark wanted to make sure that the show he thought he was shooting was looking and sounding like the show he wanted to shoot. So he had Brian out there actually cutting. Brian's also the guy who cut the famous scene where Eric gives up his necklace to the Black Widow Alliance. And any editors listening will appreciate that he used only one soundbite in that sequence. He took it as a challenge to say, how could I tell this in a different way? He's edited lots of very memorable scenes. Okay, so this sequence is the result of having two amazing storytellers, Dawn and Brian, and the luxury of time. Mm. Because Dawn and Brian knew that this was a very unique situation with Banu. So the question for them became, what is the most interesting and insightful way to handle this while still being authentic to what Banu experienced? And because they had time, they were able to just watch these scenes over and over and over. And they realized he's mourning his death in the game. And we're obviously not comparing this to a real death, but within the context of Survivor, it is his death. And the more they watched, the more they saw him going through the stages of grief, denial, and anger, and then trying to make a deal, and then ultimately accepting it. So once they realized that, they saw their way in. Just let Banu behave. Mm. Let us witness this spiritual death through his eyes and through the eyes of his tribe mates. And just stay out of the way, which isn't as easy as it sounds because there are so many options with somebody like Banu, who's so expressive. But the key driver for us is always the same. It has to be authentic to what the player experienced. Tell their story in a respectful way. We're not going to bury somebody, but we're also not going to try and protect somebody. It's not about that. It's about showing what happened. And that means you have to understand the essence. And that's what I think they got right. This was Banu's acceptance of his fate in the game and how he's going to frame it moving forward in his life.
Yeah, and I think we saw that in some pretty impactful moments, starting with hope.
Oh, but it's okay. I need to look for the idol. I need to look for the idol. God, please help me. One thing is for sure. I am not going home tonight. If I can find the immunity idol, I can change the course of the game.
Great clip. And listen to the music in that.
Yeah.
You know, it's an isolated piano, the same note over and over. He's not done yet. If I can just get a miracle from God, maybe I'm still in this game.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then as he realizes that's maybe not going to happen, he starts to have some anger.
I'm mad at myself, and I'm mad at him. If this is what you wanted, if you wanted to end my story so soon, you shouldn't have put me on Survivor in the first place.
Mm. All right. Very, very powerful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he has another emotion, which is, wait a minute. Maybe I can negotiate my way out of this. And you get a different part of his spiritual crisis.
Tiff, you need to help me, Tiff. Please.
No, please, Banu.
Please,
no.
Tiff.
Get up off your knees. What the hell are you doing?
I will not.
Banu, bro, please.
Tiff, you need to help me.
Get up. First of all, I'm not going to talk to you if you're on your knees. I'm not going to do that. I need you to stand up.
Tiff.
All right.
Very painful to listen to.
Yeah.
But real, authentic. We're getting the essence of what's happening to him. And then he ultimately reaches that place that you have to reach anytime you're grieving, which is acceptance. And just listen now to the score. And I know this may sound corny, but tell me you don't feel the universe saying it's okay.
This is it for me. 9 days is what is written for Banu. I have to just accepted.
Namaste.
thanks to the island. Thanks to everything here.
So look, I may be a little over the top on this. I fully accept that years from now, I may listen back to this and think it was too much. But in this moment, I felt like that was a beautiful experience on Survivor. Even the music cues and the cultural references that are happening there. And it ends with this beautiful drone shot of him lying on the ground, finally at peace.
Mm. Yeah, you can feel that. And you can feel that acceptance in that big shot of him just taking it in and saying, I'm done here. Mm-hmm. It then led us to this really interesting tribal council that I wanted to ask you about, Jeff. It's unusual in that he doesn't even have a shot in the dark. You know, right, for certain Banu's going home. So how do you handle that?
Well, it's very rare to have a tribal like this where everyone knows what is going to happen.
Right.
You don't have any mystery. You don't have any uncertainty. And it offers us an opportunity to do something different. In this case, what it allowed us to do was let Banu finish his story on his terms. Mm-hmm. And I love how he handled it because he remained true to himself. He was authentic. It was heartfelt. His tribe mates were very accepting and simultaneously, no doubt, grateful he was leaving. But it allowed Banu to bring some level of agency in the closure to his experience. This is it. We're going to snuff your torch and your game is over.
Yeah. And I thought it was really touching and impactful when his tribe mates said to him when he was walking away, I love you.
Right.
They meant it. You could feel it.
Jay, I think that's a perfect setup to some final words on Banu, what you just said. Because obviously, people who write about Survivor might give him a hard time. There's probably a lot of people who watch Survivor that think, oh my gosh, what a goofball. That's okay. That comes with the territory when you're courageous enough to say yes to this adventure. You're going to take criticism. But for my two cents, if we had the chance to go back and do this again, I'd put Banu on the show instantly. Because that is the kind of authenticity that we are desperately seeking. And don't be confused. I'm not saying you should be like Banu. In the same way, I'm not saying you should try to be like D. I'm saying be yourself and trust that's the only play. Banu drove his tribe mates crazy. That was clear.
Yeah.
But it's not because he was a compassionate, caring person. He drove them crazy because of his lack of gameplay abilities. You know, and you could put a lot of that on the fact that he is an immigrant and he's still learning how things work in America. And deception on a social level requires a lot of nuance.
Right.
You know, if you don't fully know the language or the slang or the unspoken gestures, it's going to be more difficult.
Yeah.
But here's what I would say to future players. I'm going to put my Survivor professorial hat on right now.
Oh.
If you see everything that I just said about Banu, and you can see the complexity and the layers of playing Survivor, and if you imagined how you would deal with Banu, like Q tried to coach him, Kenzie tried to comfort him, Tiff offered to teach him a good move from a bad move, then you probably have the skills to play this game and you'll probably be pretty good.
Definitely.
But if you found yourself only critiquing Banu and making fun of his emotional outburst and his desire to win a million hearts when there's $1 million on the line, and you found yourself asking, how did this guy get on the show when I can't get on the show? Well, you have your answer. You're just not self-aware enough to see it.
All right, with that, let's get into some fan questions. As a reminder, if you have a question for Jeff, any question, you can send them to us at survivorshoutout@cbs.com. And I am going to read those questions.
Jay.
And I might even read it here. The first one comes from Jeff. Every week, the tribes have to traverse these huge challenges that look pretty extravagant.
Yep.
How many locations do you have for the challenges? And about how long does it take to construct and deconstruct them?
All right. Well, we have several locations that are dedicated to challenges. And those areas first have to be groomed and flattened. You know, you have often really big rocks or big roots. And you want to remove all those first so you can build on them. And also so the players can somewhat safely run on it. And then the challenges themselves, a big one like a maze can take up to 6 weeks. I mean, they are big builds. And I have to say, watching our teams build these always blows my mind, because if you showed up and looked at our art department, and Jay, we talked about this in the first season.
Yeah.
They really do look like a bunch of surfers or hikers or poetry readers or didgeridoo players, you know, and they are, they're all of that, but they're also incredibly skilled craftspeople of all types of disciplines. I mean, we have engineers and we have painters and everything in between, because these challenges are often very complex. So you have to handle people running over them, and the mechanics of something has to work, and the puzzle pieces are being tossed and you don't want them to break or get damaged. So it takes a lot of team effort to build it. And then equally important is the painting of it, because that often brings the personality to life. And so we have a department called the Scenic Department, and that's their job. And you won't always notice it on the show, but every piece of the challenge has been thought about from an art point of view, because we want the players to feel the attention to detail. We want them to feel the love and to remind them, we built this for you. We're going to run it, and then we're going to tear it down. And the tearing it down is much faster than the building it up.
All right. So next question comes from Kathy. In episode one, Sweat versus Savvy Challenge, were they allowed to plug the holes in the bucket? Some small sticks and seaweed would have plugged the holes and they could have finished.
Kathy, I love this question because a lot of people were asking it, and I'll tell you why. The players knew the rules, and the rules were really simple. Just your hands and body. That's all you can use. And that was in the note. Where we made the mistake is when we edited this, we didn't think people needed to know that, so we didn't include it. And that was a careless mistake, because obviously when you're watching it as an audience member, you're going to say, just wrap it in your t-shirt, you know, and you won't have any issues. So it's a great fan question and a great supportive question, because it helps us, you know, it'll remind me next time, hey, are there any rules that I'm taking for granted? Because I think that's what happened, is we've done challenges like this and we probably just all kind of forgot that you need to remind new viewers, oh no, you can't use sticks or anything obvious like that.
Mm. All right. Last question comes from Nick. He writes, hey, Jeff, at the beginning of every challenge, you give players time to strategize, then we'll get started. How long do they get before the challenge begins? And how come you never show the audience what they talk about?
Yeah, this is a good question. In fact, Dee, why don't you weigh on this by describing what is happening in there?
Oh my goodness, it's complete chaos. And you know what? I actually agree with Nick. I think it'd be interesting to show us talking about it, strategizing, because we're just going back and forth, I think maybe 3 minutes, and we are fighting with each other because maybe someone wants to put me in a puzzle, but I suck at puzzles, so I'm not going to be the reason why my tribe loses. Then we hear Jeff saying, you got 30 seconds, and we still haven't decided who's going in what part of the challenge. So it is chaotic, and this strategizing moment can really decide whether or not your tribe loses.
Yeah, and you've talked about that already this season, Dee, that those conversations are important. And I'm hearing you that it's something we should look at. And a lot of it is just tracking the three stories with five or six people all talking and then trying to connect it to what happens in the challenge.
Right.
But it's a good opportunity for us. So I will go back to the team again. Thank you, Nick, for another fan observation. And maybe there is a way that we could include this that would help the audience track who did end up on the puzzle and was that a good decision or not. All right, we'll take that back to the team. Okay, that's it for this week's episode of On Fire. If you're enjoying the show and you have a moment, we'd love a rating. It helps us grow.
Or if you're a rock star, you can leave us a review like this one that comes from Colin J. Frog on Apple Podcasts. And that says, my girlfriend got me into the show hard with season 45. And this podcast has a lot of answers to the million questions she couldn't answer. Absolutely love the background of the creative process and philosophy behind the game.
Awesome.
And if you leave us a review, we might just read it here. So please go do that wherever you listen to podcasts.
There's a brand new episode of Survivor every Wednesday at 8, 7 Central on CBS and Paramount Plus. And immediately following that episode, you can come right here for a new episode of On Fire. We'll see you then.